Happy Saturday, St. Louis, and welcome to the Home Show right here on KMOX, the voice of St. Louis. And I am your host, Rich Orris, here to help you tackle all of your home maintenance and remodeling questions. I will be your voice of reason today. I hope everybody had a fantastic Thanksgiving. Maybe you're recovering from hosting that big feast a little bit, wondering how to fix that wobbly chair, or perhaps you're already planning some upgrades to impress everyone at next year's gathering or Christmas, whatever it is. I'm here to help make your home the best it can be right here today. We're live this morning, and I'd love to hear from you. Give me a call. You heard the number. We'll run it again right now. Get ready. Write this down, 314-436-7900, where you'll find me for the next 2 straight hours. We can help you out. Let's talk about all your projects, your repairs, your remodeling dreams. It's the perfect time to get ahead of those winter to-do lists, wrap up the 2024 with a fresh home project, get something nice started for you. If you're planning something for the new year, let's figure out a good plan and how to get you in there. So, hey, grab some pumpkin pie leftover, settle in. Let's dive right into the Home Improvement Show. Starts right now, and we are good and geared up and ready to go for you. Again, 314-436-7900. Get you straight to me, and I'm sure there's a lot of post-Thanksgiving Day home things that you're doing, that you're wondering, that what could help out and all of that after the big gathering and getting ready for the next one, getting ready for Christmas the next time around. So we've got Christy on the line. She is has something for us. So Christy, are you there? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, and thank you for taking my call.
Oh, yeah,
I am wanting to have a railing, a metal, like a wrought iron railing, installed into my concrete walkway in the front. When will I know in the spring that it's like a good enough time that it'll be warm enough for the concrete to set well that I can have my handyman come do that?
So it will. It'll depend a little bit on how he's going to install that. Either way, you're drilling into concrete. So if he's going to bolt it down and put a couple bolts at each post, then you're gonna have a drill that's more of like a hammer drill, just drilling holes for those bolts to go in. So that you really that might require a little bit warmer, but the other way that they do it is they core drill, and that hole that's a more expensive bit, more professional, about 1.5-inch round hole going through. So that is. Can cut a little bit better, straighter, and easier than just a person on a hammer drill that's kind of vibrating and all that. So that might be a little bit easier if it's a professional kind of hole like that. And then they just stick the whole post down and epoxy it into that hole. But either way, I would say it doesn't have to be like really, really warm or hot. If the ground has been above freezing for any amount of time, more than like a week or so, I think you would be perfectly fine to do that. So you're going to hit that probably pretty easily, like in mid late March would be a good time to plan that.
Well, thank you. That's exactly what I wanted to know. Thanks for your service.
Oh, yeah, no problem. Thanks for the call, Christy. That was a good question of thinking ahead in what you're planning and how do you get it the right way, the proper way. What are those things that you should be doing when doing what seems sometimes like a pretty simple task, but could have some repercussions there. So great question, great thought, and great planning ahead there. So let's do a little more planning here on kind of the post-Thanksgiving Day, after everybody's gone, after you've had the big meal, everything you go through. What are some of those things that we should be performing now that we've completed that. And amazingly, the first one on the list is one of the biggest ones that I personally am going to have to do too, is deep clean that oven and the stove, especially the oven, with all the holiday cooking, everything. You give it a good scrub, get everything out of there, and try not, make sure you use like a non-toxic cleaner. A lot of newer ovens have some really good clean cycles. You put some water in there and they run a clean cycle and it really softens and loosens everything for you. But we had a ham. Man, when we went to take this ham out of the oven, there was so much juice in that pot. It started splashing over and just really, it made a good mess for us to clean up in our oven. So we'll be getting to that once all the guests are gone and we're getting back into cleaning everything up. Something a lot of people may not think about too is sharpening your knives. So if you have good cutting knives, think about how long you've had them and consider sharpening some of those knives, getting a good sharpening tool or sending them out to be sharpened. You'll be amazed at how well they work again. And you're like, oh, wow, now I realize why I like this knife so much to begin with. It's actually working better. So more cleaning, the garbage disposal, freshen up that garbage disposal. You can grind some lemon peels, some ice cubes, break everything up and clean that. The refrigerator, of course, is another big cleaning area of one spills, a lot of leftovers. Toss those extra leftovers that you're not going to end up eating and really kind of get that refrigerator prepared for the next month, the next December, the next holiday meal coming up. So we've got more thoughts and tips on things that we should be doing. But again, anything that you're looking for today, I'm here. We've got 2 straight hours for you. Plenty of time for anything you need around your home, maintenance, remodeling, whatever you're interested in. Just give me a shout. You can find me again, 314-436-7900. We're going to jump into our first break, and maybe we'll drum up a few more questions here right after the break. Right after that, we'll be back. All right, everybody, we're back. Rich Orris here live for you, ready for anything you got going on. Feel free to give me a call, 314-436-7900, whatever your post-Thanksgiving Day needs may be. I'm here for you right now. We've got Jane on the phone, so let's jump on there with Jane and see what's going on. Are you there? Can you hear me?
Hi there, Rich. Thanks for taking my call. I do have a question. It kind of follows the first lady that called, Christy. We are looking to put a railing, metal or the composite. I wondered, you know, which one is less expensive, I guess, to put in. And it's for a terraced type of steps going into our home. So that kind of curves, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Not too bad, but, you know. And you know, the steps are long steps. You take a step up, and then you kind of walk, and then and you know what I mean by terraced.
Sure, sure, yeah. Yeah, and they're all in concrete?
Yes.
Okay.
All right, and we just want to put a railing on one side of the steps. What company would do that? I don't have a handyman, like she said.
Sure.
Wish I did. But which is less expensive, I guess, because we're not sure how long we're going to stay in this home. So,
yeah, so it depends on what, how much rail you want. And I'm guessing that it kind of goes up at all terrace with the ground, so you're never really super high off the ground, right?
No, I don't know what you mean by that.
Yeah, so when you're walking on the sidewalk and it kind of terraces up, I'm envisioning like a 1 or 2 8-inch steps, and then you kind of walk a ways and like one more 8-inch step. In your grade level with your grass or your landscaping around, it's pretty much close to the level of that sidewalk. So it's not like 2 feet off the ground or anything, correct?
Oh, no.
Okay,
no.
Yep, that's what I figured.
And, like and, a Or split level home, yeah.
Yeah, and so depending on how you do it, the good thing about the wrought iron metal rails generally cost more in comparison to an aluminum or a composite type rail, but you can do more kind of custom things with a wrought iron rail, and you with rail systems, you don't really have that ability. So I'm usually doing a wrought iron rail in your situation and advising that because it can actually be the same or possibly be a little bit less because you don't need the full rail, all the spindles, so people won't fall through the side and all of that jazz going on with that rail. Mm-hmm. So if all you do are post and a top rail, the two ways that you could do it is you can put a little, like two posts and a little top rail on the angle at each step and nothing in between, or yeah. You can just run that top rail in between, and maybe it, depending on the distances, it might require another post, but it can give you something to hold on to through that whole walk of that whole sidewalk. So we do that quite a bit too. So it costs more in general, but when you customize it down to something simpler, it can either be the same or actually sometimes even save money doing that. So in your question about who to do it, you're looking for like a wrought iron rail company. I do a lot with Classic Metalcraft here in St. Louis, and there's plenty of wrought iron rail companies out there that do custom wrought iron rails and everything that you can find. That's just who I've been using with Mosby Building Arts for a very, very long time. And they're good. They're reputable. They do great work.
Can you say the name of that company one more time, please?
Classic Metal Craft.
Classic Metal and then Craft, C-R-A-F-T?
Yes. Yep.
All right. And then I know what you're saying about possibly saving some, you might not need a full railing.
Yeah.
The steps and then, but they know how to do that. And then
yes.
It'd be a little bit of a space without, but you'd be able to grab the next.
Yep. And the way that they install it, kind of the two ways that I was describing with Christy is they're going to either put it outside of the sidewalk in the ground in kind of like a concrete kind of pier, like they dig a little hole and they put, so if it can be just kind of outside of that, they'll do it that way. Or if when it's on the actual concrete, they'll drill like an inch and a half or so round hole and they epoxy that like a 1-inch post in there. And that is very, very sturdy. And they'll have a cap so you don't see the hole. It kind of just goes down over it and has a little set screw to hold it there. So you won't see the hole through the concrete. It'll be a nice little decorative cap at the bottom. But mm-hmm. that is a very sturdy way to do it. It can be more sturdy than just trying to bolt something down that sits on top of the concrete. So
yeah.
The composite rails, the aluminum rails, most of those, that's how they're going to be. So if you found someone like a handyman type service that said, well, I can buy the other rail and not spend so much on labor and how they install it, and maybe the price is comparable or slightly better. But the question comes in is how sturdy is it going to be and for how long?
Yeah.
And that wrought iron rail, they prime it, they paint it with that black. Everyone in St. Louis has seen how long wrought iron rails rust. Everybody kind of complains like, well, they rust out. Well, but it generally takes 40 years or 50 years sometimes. It can take a very, very long time. If they don't prime and paint it very well, it could be faster. You kind of get what you pay for throughout all those products, but generally most wrought iron rail people know how to prime and paint it well and get it to last a good 30-something, 40 years.
Yeah, on our porch, there is a metal railing that is 50 plus years old. I think we've painted it once.
Yeah.
Just because we wanted to change the color.
Yep.
But what you're calling, and I don't want to take too much time. You mentioned the core drill is more professional, and that's what you were talking about.
Yep.
with the, what did you say they put on top of it?
There's just like a little shoe cap that goes around the post. It's just a decorative cap, so it'll be on the post. So when the post goes in and gets epoxied in, then that cap just slides down and kind of sits on top of the concrete, covers the hole. They'll tighten a little set screw with like an Allen wrench to hold it in place. So you don't see the hole because that square cap will be about 2 inches square or something. So it'll cover that whole hole. And it looks very good.
Right.
And it's extremely sturdy. So you also got to kind of pick and choose and go, well, if we do it that way, we get a lot of lasting value out of this, and we won't, you know, you won't be looking at it again. So even if it's slightly more, it might be the better value in the long run.
Right, versus the hammer drill, which is less expensive with the bolts that are showing.
Yep.
And that's what you say they would do if we chose the,
most of those composite rails, that's how those composite rails are going to go in.
There's
a metal piece that they bolt down. You wouldn't see the bolts because the composite post would like slide over that metal piece. But that can come loose and you're putting pressure on it and you're reliant kind of on that bolt through and the metal that's holding it. So not that it's not sturdy, but it can loosen up and get less sturdy and need more maintenance down the road to tighten it back up or something like that when the other one's really not going to do that.
Right. Well, thanks a lot, Rich. Really appreciate your time.
No problem. I appreciate the call and a great question on kind of thinking about how well do you do something. And you like we always talk about, what kind of timeline are you thinking about looking at? And even if you're like, well, maybe 5 to 10 years tops, it would still be nice even in that time span to not have to worry about doing any maintenance to it or tighten it up or things like that later on, or having to even redo it because it just deteriorated and maybe didn't last. You don't want to get real cheap composite material from big box stores. There's better materials out there. So talking about those different types of rails and composite rails, you kind of get what you pay for, like we always say. So the more you buy up, the more expensive it's going to get, the better it'll be, but the closer you'll get to that wrought iron price. So I'm always recommending wrought iron when we get into those situations. But hey, let's take our middle hour break here and see if we can drum up a couple more questions while we're away. Remember, 314-436-7900. Get you right here. We'll be right back. We are back. Welcome back. We've got a lot of time here for you. We got another about hour and a half to go. So anything that you're curious about, anything maintenance-wise, anything remodeling-wise, maybe you've kind of, after Thanksgiving, have realized how things work, how things function. Last week, I was talking a little bit about paying attention to that, seeing what people do. Are there complications? Maybe taking some notes on how the traffic pattern is and works and flows and the food. And that gives you good information later to redesign a kitchen area, dining area, hearth room area on what happened and how did everybody get through it? And did you notice anything? And then we can figure out how to help correct that. So anything that you're thinking like that, we've got your back right here today. I'll be your voice of reason for all of it. Again, you can reach me at 314-436-7900. And of course, a couple good questions about railings and having railings up walks like that when you have steps, helping people get in and out of that house, just having something there is such a great idea. And I have a railing we did a couple years ago, I guess, We did the sidewalk too, actually, because this client has Parkinson's, and if you're familiar at all with the disease of Parkinson's, walking on inclines can be very difficult for them, and then having high steps, multiple steps in a row, can be very difficult to maneuver. So it was kind of a slope, and we put in a sidewalk to get down to where the trash can hits the curb and the mailbox is. And it's kind of like what Jane was describing. But it's smaller steps. So we did about a 3.5 inch step every 4 feet or so all the way down this walk to the mailbox. And that helps them kind of walk a little bit, take a step, and lets their mind kind of reset before they get to the next step, having that landing, that kind of distance. But on both sides, we did that exact railing. It's basically just posts that go down because it is at grade level, so we're not worried about height or people going through it. It was more just the safety and security of, I need something. When I put my hand on something, my mind says I'm stable, whether it's helping or not, or you could do it without it or not. It just helps your mind go, yep, I'm good now. So we did that on both sides all the way up and down. So either direction, you could use your dominant hand, and it's basically just a post every 6-8 feet and a top rail running between that you can run your hand on, that good handrail height. So great idea to have something like that, and something we find ourselves adding to houses quite often. Another spot I've done a lot of these is going out into the garage. It's very typical to have just a couple concrete steps to that garage floor, maybe like 2 steps. And that doesn't necessarily require handrails, but of course, as you age, those handrails, you need them. They make you more comfortable. So it's pretty easy for these wrought iron rail companies to just put 1 post into that garage floor at the bottom of the steps. They can do that core drill. They can get it in there real great and sturdy. And then that top rail just goes up to the wall and just bolts to the wall through the drywall to a 2x4. It's right next to a door, so there's almost always a lot of framing in there that they can secure that to very well. And then you got a good sturdy top rail taking you all the way up and down those stairs. And again, it's a great idea if you can afford it to do that on both sides of that door, because we all have a comfortable and dominant hand, especially when we get older and you have a cane or something that you're carrying. Well, then you've got this other hand. So it's good to be able to have a rail on both sides going up and or down in order to be able to take that hand that you feel comfortable with and use that on that rail on your way in and out. So those we do quite a bit of in a lot of grab bars, accessibility around the house. I know this year has been a big year for accessibility, aging in place, keeping everyone in their homes with the way our market is right now, and the interest rates moving, downsizing, changing has become so expensive. Plus with the cost of homes just in general, you're paying a lot of money for a different, smaller home. So we have a lot of clients that are staying in the little bit larger home or the 2-story home, and they're doing all these accessible kind of aging in place items around their house to just help them stay there. And that's a lot more affordable in the long run than changing, finding a ranch, downsizing, having the expense of moving everything, getting your house ready to sell. What do you need to work on the new house? There's a lot of expenses in moving. So when you start to add up and you go, okay, well, I can get a stair lift for $5,000, $8,000, $10,000 if it's complicated, however that goes, that alone is like way less than even what you'll pay a realtor in commissions and the percentage just to handle the transaction and sell your property, much less moving and everything else. So we're going around and we're doing a lot of things to keep floors level from one room to the next, to put grab bars and items around that help people function in their house and stay longer in their house. And it really is a great thing to do, because it turns out in the end way less expensive than actually assisted living, retirement type community, or than actually moving to a house that has everything you need, is one level. Maybe things are more ready to go for you. So, yeah, a lot of times we are looking at taking that house, and it's less of an investment in the long run to move the laundry room somewhere to the main floor area and keep you in your home than it could be to try and find a different home. We've been challenged with that for a couple years, so it's brought a lot of work and a lot of people peace of mind inside their homes. And I've done that laundry room some pretty simple ways sometimes, especially if you're in a 3 or maybe 4 bedroom home and you have a ranch, but you don't have the laundry room on the main floor. I mean, you can literally just take one of those bedrooms and in the closet or even just on a wall, set yourself up with the plumbing and everything you need to get that washer and dryer up there. You can simplify what you're doing in there, as far as you don't have to necessarily, you can buy a cabinet to store things in and set it next to it. You can have a table to fold your clothes on. You can do built-in cabinets with a sink, with a folding area. You can do Formica countertops. You can do quartz countertops. Or you could literally buy a folding table and stand it up next to there. You can go to IKEA and find all these kits that you can figure out and install and organize. And the great thing about that is you've really just got a few things to take out and a little bit of plumbing patchwork and capping off and eliminating, and a little bit of drywall work if you wanted to make that bedroom laundry area a bedroom again for someone or for the next buyer of the home. A lot of people are very concerned about who buys the home, and if I made it a laundry room and now I took a 4-bedroom to a 3-bedroom or a 3-bedroom to a 2-bedroom, well, if it's easily converted back into a bedroom, then that's fine. And you can even leave that to the next buyer to perform, but it's all kind of flat on the wall and it's very easy to just change everything out of there and make it a bedroom again. And you're not really losing value on that home. That's what a lot of people everyone's really worried about, that return on investment. Well, the return on investment could go up just from having laundry up there in some way, shape, or form. So there's a lot of ways to skin the cat to do that, to keep you in your home, and design build remodeling can be the best way to help you figure it out and make those decisions and understand and know what you're going to get. So don't forget, I'm right here for everybody. I say we get into our final break of this hour and maybe we can drum something up while we're gone. Again, 314-436-7900. Get you right to me. Anything you need, don't touch that dial. We'll get to you as soon as we return.
It's the Home Improvement Show, presented by Mosby Building Arts on KMOX. Now, once again, Rich Orris.
All right, we are back. We are live and lively and got a lot of show left for you. Got one segment here that we could fit something in, but got a whole another hour for you after that. So hopefully, let's see if we can get something in here. If you've got anything you're thinking about, I'm sure there's some post-Thanksgiving Day thoughts, ideas, questions. What should you be doing? Feel free to give me a call right here, 314-436-7900. finds me right now. So in my house, we still have a lot of our guests there from Chicago staying with us, having a really great time. But so this morning, I kind of thought, let's go over some of the list of the things that we do once that's over, and what should we consider? Because it's easy to kind of forget areas or some stuff that might really kind of help you out later or get you ready for December, for Christmas, for the next party. We kind of went over the kitchen and the appliances and good ideas to what should happen in there. But we've also got other living areas, living spaces. We've got the dining area. So kind of the same thing in our house is I went in and sat with some of our guests in my dining room on Thanksgiving and said, wow, I don't even know that I might have never even eaten in there. If I have, it's only been one or two different times, and it's been a Christmas or a Thanksgiving. So kind of pay attention to that room that you usually don't pay a lot of attention to. You want to address any food or drink spills really promptly to make sure they don't set in and get cleaned up well. Reorganizing the furniture, if you've moved things around, rearrange it back, get things back to normal. And then, of course, for your serving items, serving ware, you want to really wash that, do the silver, the linens, deep clean everything, and have it ready to go for that next event. Another area is easy to forget about is the bathrooms, the powder room. Make sure you get in there and check it out. Restock anything, hand soap, towels, toilet paper. Get everything ready for the next one. Clean the drains, clean shower drains, all the areas where people stayed, and just get it ready and have it good and ready to go. Outside the home, today's not probably going to be the best day to be roaming around outside. Hopefully, maybe you've already done some of this, but if not, make a list and maybe kind of consider when it does settle down, when we do get a little warmer day, go out there in the evening, check that outdoor lighting, check the pathways, the driveways, the entry lights, just ensure that everything's working good, ready to go. Turn on the lights you haven't in a while. And of course, your gutters are an important part of winter too. You want to make sure they're cleaned and ready to go because we're going to have some freezes. You want to make sure you try and avoid any ice damming at the roof where it meets the gutters during this freezing weather. So consider all of that. And then of course, your leaves, if you haven't done your big cleanup, your last mow of the year. I got lucky, just did mine last week, got all the leaves up, got everything mowed nice. So I cut it a little bit lower than normal because it's got plenty of time to sit dormant, start growing in the spring with a lot of spring rain. So it's not a bad idea to cut that a little bit less and then clean up all the gardens and the leaves and mulch and everything like that, have it ready to go for this winter. And so kind of getting back to winter on the inside of the house. Hopefully we've all had our HVAC systems checked out. If not, definitely have that done. There's a lot to consider with your HVAC system, especially when you need work. When you need something new, I kind of put out a little bit of warning. We mentioned a lot about you get what you pay for, and really consider who's doing what and what some of the risk and implications of how it's done may be. I just saw a brand new system that was put in basically around the springtime. The air conditioning and the furnace, and there was a couple problems, and it wasn't kind of a little bit done on the side the way they were explaining it. Not the greatest clean, professional install. I've seen, in considering some of how things were done, like the flue pipe could have been angled a little bit more. It's I think it's working and functioning, but definitely need to angle that down a little bit more just to make sure. And it's not hard to do. And when disconnecting it and putting it back, it's even easier to do because you're doing it already. But there, so on this system wasn't working right. There were some whole house dampers that were shut. Half the house was not even getting air. So you've got this furnace trying to run, trying to move air and make it work the way that it should. So we got our HVAC company out there to kind of look at it too and see their opinion and what's going on and everything. And never even realized, he kind of looked at it and said, wow, I didn't think when I was looking at it to check a filter to see how the filter was. Everybody knows you have your furnace filter, and generally when you have a professional company, a professional service install a furnace, they're going to put a filter in this. And so when it's all said and done and they're walking out the door, yep, you're good to go. You'll probably get some smells when you turn on the heat, but everything should be good for you. And then we find out there was never, ever a filter even put into this new system. So it didn't even have one. We're like, oh, so getting a filter in there, trying to make this thing function the way it's supposed to was quite complicated. And the unit, we found out, it's a little bit oversized for the house. So that could be playing a little bit. Something we see a lot of with heating and cooling is just oversizing, thinking, it's going to be fine. And then, but sometimes it's just not, and it might not work out well if that system is too big for that house. So have a lot of conversation and consider who's doing all this work for you. And you get what you pay for. Find somebody good, professional, that's going to back it and all of that. So, hey, we're up against our last break here. We'll have the news, all of that. We'll be back right after this. 314-436-7900 finds me. All right, we are back. Hour two for everybody. Got a whole hour left again, so don't forget. You guys are what make this show so great, trying to make St. Louis better, trying to help everybody out with their houses and really just keep them in good tip-top shape. Ideas, we've been talking, covering a lot about post the Thanksgiving Day festivities, Christmas coming up. So a lot more to do here and go over. We had a couple really good questions in the last hour about some metal rails, what type of rails, wrought iron rails, what do you put on your front walk? And so for everybody out there, we're here. We've got plenty of time left for you. Lots to do today. 314-436-7900. Get you into me. Anything you need, I'd love to hear from you. But for now, let's kind of go over some of the stuff that we had last week, because I do love doing that. We had some great questions and conversations, and I'm kind of letting people know too that you can go backwards into the go online, go into Odyssey.com, the Odyssey app, and you can find these podcasts from weeks and even years prior and go back and hear some of the things. So if there's something that you missed, and last week we did have a couple really good conversations. We had one with Terry that was hoping to repair a two-handle shower faucet system. And we really got into a discussion about how they make these big escutcheon plates that are meant for replacing that two-handle to a single-handle faucet system. And there's good reason to do that. And one is the hot water scalding, the whole reason they changed and don't want the two-handle. And the other is trying to find parts for the two-handle. And you get into repairing, and how long is that going to last? So, but then we had David call in, who's a plumber, and he talked about his experience with those discussions and how to fix that. And he definitely agreed on when you have back-to-back showers, if you go with a method like that to change one, then you're towards the backside of the other. Change them both at the same time. Get them new, get them fresh, be less to look at. It would be heartbreaking to fix something like that. And then even 3 months to a year later, you end up needing a repair on the other one, and you're right back up against it. But then Terry jumped in, and he spoke about making his own kind of escutcheon plate out of a quarter-inch sheet of PVC, so you can kind of customize that to the size of the hole that you need through that shower for that repair, and get that caulked on there, installed, caulked all the way around. And then all you really got to do is, just like every shower, keep your eye on the caulk in the corners to needing to re-caulk that and keeping water out. So that was really good. And then we had another interesting conversation with Debbie about having gnats around her sink. She was thinking that maybe they'd come in with some plants that she brought in from outdoors. And it was interesting because it was around a couple of her sinks. But then this was kind of fun for me because Linda had called in and she started talking about her experience with that and kind of a home remedy for a situation like that. So we actually got Linda added into that phone call with me and Debbie. It was a lot of fun, and we had a lot of help with people, the community, calling in to kind of help with different solutions for everybody out there. So it was really cool, and it was a lot of fun. So I like to mention some of these conversations just so you can go back and hear them if it's something that you would like to know about. If you had some gnats and you're like, oh man, maybe I'll go hear what they talked about with that, you can do that in that Odyssey app or online and find all those shows. So talking about finding things, Mike found us, and let's get right to Mike and see what's happening. Thanks for calling, Mike. What do you got going on?
Hey, Rich, my daughter lives in South County. She's about a 60-year-old ranch house. It has a chimney located in the back of the house, comes up rather close to the back of the house just for the furnace. And she's had, with the heavy rains and that, every time she gets water coming down the bedroom wall on the inside of the back wall, which is right in line with the chimney. So we thought it was flashing or needing to divert water. Had somebody come out from a chimney company, and they looked at the top, unbeknownst to us, the top of the chimney where the mortar is, I guess, on top, was all cracked and deteriorated. So they suggested that they come out and redo the top of that and then seal the bricks. And just wondering if that's something that passes the sniff test for you, that it, you know, that's probably... Or could that be where the water is coming from down the chimney to that wall?
Sure. So I'm guessing the whole chimney is brick?
Correct.
And you've got the counter flashing around it where it ties into the roof?
Yep.
And that is there a area of the roof that what's called a cricket behind that chimney?
No, there is not a cricket there. We thought about that, but the company that came out looked at that and said, we think that looks pretty good the way that it is flashed right now.
Sure.
So we don't want to disturb that, but took pictures of the top of the chimney where that, I guess, I don't know what you call it, on top of the mortar on top of the chimney was all cracked and deteriorated, and they said that's where they think the water's coming from.
Yeah. And so I'm guessing this chimney's only like a couple feet wide.
Yep.
And that's true. The ones that usually don't always have a cricket behind them because they're just not very wide.
Right.
So that can work fine and work for many, many years if you have good flashing put the right way around that. You don't have to have that cricket. It just helps move that water around.
Yes. And the roof is rather new, maybe, you know, 5 years old or something. Mm-hmm. So they think they did that well, but then the water comes down the inside wall, and it's a plaster wall, and it actually bubbles up the paint, and then if you just leave it alone, it just sucks back in. But, you know, obviously it's not a good situation. So I think we're going to proceed with that. Just wanted to know your opinion on if that's the way the water can get in and come down that way.
So it is definitely 100% the first way that water can get in. And the problem with brick chimneys with flues and how they're kind of built and set up is there's multiple areas that can happen, and it's kind of a hit or miss. Find what you can, check into everything, and do all the pieces that you can to try and stop it, because sometimes it's a couple of different things. And the last one on the list for a full masonry house with a brick chimney with flue pipes in it is just general condensation happening inside of that full masonry system. So I've seen a lot of old homes with these chimneys, and they fix leaks, and the leaks are truly fixed. But what happens is you can get condensation in the winter also. So if you imagine what's happening to your wall, and then you fix the wall, but then a year, 2 years, 3 years down the road, you start seeing that bubbling happen again, but it's 10 or 20% of what the original leak looked like. That means it could be another area, or it could be all the way down to just condensation forming that's almost impossible to correct. It's just you're repairing the wall. So I've seen a lot of them where, oh, we had this 2 foot area, and now I've got this 6 inch area that keeps doing it. And it could even be just into that condensation. So tuck pointing, if there's any brick facing that's come off, looking for any cracks in the brick, in the mortar, where water could get in, that's kind of step two after that cap where things could. But I will tell you, and then, of course, what you've mentioned already that looks good is that flashing down. And so it's a matter of, I think you're taking the right steps. Do the cap first.
Yeah, that's what they said. The cap, and then seal the bricks to the bricks, because they say it's like a sponge. It soaks in the water, and that it's only when they get a lot of rain. So, I mean, right now. So, okay, so that's good. I just wanted
that,
to make
that
sure.
Is really good. I feel that cap is so important. Something that we've done over the years in how we replace those caps, we actually came up with a method that we basically put a form around the brick where the cap's going to start at the top of the brick, and take that cap and extend that cap out on top of like 2x4s that create a concrete form. So you create, because right now all the caps are right at the edge of the brick.
Yeah, like a drip edge almost.
It creates like a drip edge. I would maybe even ask them what they think about that, because it's not like super difficult to do. And it creates like that drip edge, because the first spot that I see water getting in at chimney caps is where the cap will just slightly lift off that brick.
Yeah.
And that's your crack. And it just rolls right in there, and having that kind of drip edge overhanging, even if they did it 3/4, we just took 4 2x4s, screwed them around it tightly at the level of the brick, and then we poured that cap to the 2x4 edge, and then once it was set up, we took that off, and that kept a lot of water out and a lot of water off the face of that brick. Then sealing that brick's a good idea, so you're definitely on the right track.
Okay, and that cap is slanted, I guess, right?
There. Yeah, it'll slope away from the pipes and everything. Yep.
I knew nothing about chimneys before this, but now I think I understand a little bit more. So thank you very much.
All right, you're welcome. Great call, Mike. We're going to get into our break here, but again, we're here for you. We've got plenty of time, 314-436-7900. We'll get you right to me. We'll have a lot coming up next, so stay tuned, and we'll be back.
You're listening to The Home Improvement Show, presented by Mosby Building Arts on KMOX. Now, once again, here's Rich Orris.
All right, guys, we're back, having a blast here. Great question from Mike. It's good to do a double check, get a second opinion, and just make sure you think that you're doing the right thing. It just, it's a great thing to do. Makes you more comfortable. So, like Mike, you can find me right here, 314-436-7900. Got plenty of time for everybody left. And one thing I didn't mention while going over that repair with Mike, and it was mainly because he did say the word replace, and you have to watch what people are going to do in those instances, because a lot of tuck pointing companies will just put a layer over top of that existing cap. So if you've got a cap that's an inch and a half, 2 inches thick, and it's cracked all the way through, and you run a quarter inch layer of a masonry product over top of that whole thing, you've got a limited lifespan before this cracks again. And so, and of course, that costs a lot less than the full tear it off, completely replace that cap, which is a much, much better system with a lot more lasting value out of it. And sometimes you can see these things even just from the ground. If you look up and your brick ends on a chimney and you don't see a good inch to 2 inches of a white concrete cap kind of on top of that, from the edge of that chimney on top of that brick, then you need some work done to that cap. You can even see it a couple stories down from the ground pretty easily when they wear that well. So consider that in talking to people. Are they going to just cap over it, or are they going to completely replace it, like the words that Mike used there? So we've got Bruce on the line. Let's jump to Bruce and see what's happening.
Yes, Bruce. I'm the original owner of my house. Built this house was built in 1993. The big hailstorm on May 26th, there was a 10-minute storm, and it was softball-sized hail in West St. Louis County. I had damage to my roof, and I put a CertainTeed Northgate Climate Flex Class 4 shingles on my roof. The siding, which I had vinyl, I'm going to be replacing the whole house. Okay,
uh-huh.
I'm going to be using CertainTeed cedar boards, the 7-inch wide, and the R value is 2.0. So the plan is to replace the siding, take off the Tyvek, put new Tyvek down, and put the cedar boards on. Now, I'm thinking of using the GreenGuard Kingspan siding underlayment.
Okay. Oh, do we lose? Oh, we lost Bruce. That's a bummer. Hey, Bruce, call back in, and we'll have plenty of time to get back with you and answer those questions, because I'm glad to hear you're talking about Tyvek and insulation and all these different things. So we'll get back to you, get back with us, and we'll get you figured out for sure. But that is a good thing to look at when you're doing siding. I was going to ask about that house wrap, because a lot of houses in 93 didn't necessarily have it on there when they built the house, so it's adding it, and it's a great thing to consider doing behind vinyl siding. So we got Bruce back, I think. Bruce, are you there?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
All right.
Basically, you got my front part, and I'm looking at the GreenGuard Kingspan, the Q350, the 3/8 inch, it's a 3.3. It's the thicker one. What do you think of that? I'm looking. My R value on my cedar boards is 2.0. I'd like to get my R rating up and sound deadened. What do you think of that idea? And if I use the GreenGuard, do I need to use the Tyvek as a moisture barrier? You know.
So is that GreenGuard? Is that like a fan fold type of insulation panel?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so yes, if you use that fanfold insulation, I would still do the Tyvek underneath there, because that fanfold insulation was really developed and meant more for giving installers a flatter surface to drive their nails against and see how the vinyl siding sits kind of on a flush plane when they were installing it over top of an existing wood lap siding, which is a horrible idea.
I agree. We're taking it down to the studs. So
yep.
So the Tyvek would be first.
Yeah,
then Tyvek the Green Guard
would be first. Then the Green Guard. Then your siding, and the Green Guard will get you a little bit of an extra R value. But what the Green Guard doesn't do is it doesn't act as a watershed plane, and
okay.
It doesn't block air infiltration either. It helps with it because you've got every 4 feet, you've got this panel that you put on there, but there's a lot of seams and a lot of places where it connects and lets air and water through. So the Tyvek sheds off the water, so that's the best way to go.
Okay, so on YouTube, they suggest that you tape the seams to increase that. So I'm looking at it, and they don't mention how much R value I'm gaining on their website. So is this a waste of money, or what do you think?
I don't know that Green Guard is going to give you enough insulation value that it's going to help you that much with that insulation value. That may be a little bit of overkill and a tiny bit of waste of money, because you've got a decent four siding. That cedar boards that's a good R value with the insulated siding for coming from the outside. And you'll have the thing that helps the most is when you put that house wrap on, if they flash tape it well around windows and doors and keep the watershed plane getting the water to the bottom, but then they seam tape it and flash tape it to where it blocks air infiltration. Also, the air infiltration is where you really lose inside your house. So the cedar boards is great for the insulation value, but you get a lot of benefit from installing that house wrap correctly, not just to keep water out, but to keep your house warmer in the winter, cooler in the summer, because you're not having that wrong temperature air infiltrate into the house and change and make the house less comfortable. So there's a big difference between air infiltrating and changing the temperature inside the house because of the temperature of the air, and then R value holding back temperature. But once the air comes through, the R value all of a sudden doesn't mean much because it got to the other side.
So when they install the Tyvek, they should be taping around windows and doors to prevent air infiltration.
Yep.
That would be... Yeah, because I'm using a local company. I won't mention their name. They're
sure.
In Kirkwood, but and they've got credentials and their quality. So it sounds like if it was your house, you would skip the Green Guard and Tyvek, wrap around, and use the cedar boards, and then I'm good to go.
Yes, I definitely believe so. And the only other thing I'd throw in is when you're when they're doing it, or when you're talking to them before about taping the actual house wrap, when you get to the windows and doors, you want to use a flashing tape, not the Tyvek seam tape. It's a 4-inch black backed butyl base, like tar tape, that will keep out more water also. So just make sure they're using the better tape on the doors and windows, and then the seam tape can go on all the seams, and that's fine.
Okay, so around the doors and windows, it's a tar tape, and it's 4-inch, and it's black.
Yep. Correct.
Okay, I appreciate your show. It's fantastic.
Oh, hey, I appreciate you calling in, and hopefully that was gave you some good things to think about, talk about, consider, and make sure that they're doing, because I've seen the disappointment. I'll tell a little story after this break about when a house is was done incorrectly. And it's very interesting, and they had all the right stuff and still didn't quite get it right. So I'll get into that when we return. Also get into more of your calls, questions, and concerns. You can find me right here, 314-436-7900. We're going to jump into our break. Don't touch that dial. Stay tuned. All right, guys, we are back. We got plenty of things to talk about, plenty of things to consider, but let's consider what you've got going on. Just like we went through with Bruce, I'm here for you, 314-436-7900. And doing what I do daily for Mosby Building Arts, I see a lot of different houses, a lot of different clients, a lot of different situations. And so I run into a lot of situations that are unfortunate, and a lot of times I really feel bad going through and explaining why one system's better than the other, and you pick this one, but this could have helped you more. And I did, talking to Bruce about his house, wrapping, getting things right, built in 1993. Well, I can tell you right now, when I was building room additions and projects like that in 1993, and we installed the house wrap on the house from 93 to 2000 or so, I installed that incorrectly on every job that I did. I installed every window, not flash tape, the best way possible to that house wrap on every job that we did. And it was what we knew. It was what we were taught. It was what we learned. And it's what we were told to do as workers. So about 4, 5, 6 years ago, I was looking at a house that had been re-sited and everything was completely redone, and they were having some issues with some leaks or in different areas. And I was able to kind of look behind. You can pull that vinyl siding back and you can see kind of how they flashed the windows in certain areas and doors. You can pull siding back and see if they used it at all or not. So I was explaining to this homeowner about the flashing tape and using that 4-inch actual flashing tape and how to use it, because it can be done wrong. And what I saw was they had the right tape, they just didn't put it on the best way possible correctly. So they were still guiding some water into the house the way that this was done. So I'm explaining to them how, well, at the top of the window, the house wrap should actually go over top of that flashing tape. And then you tape the corners, and then you see it down the sides. And at the bottom, it should be under the window flange, not on top of it. And I'm going through all this and explaining the tape. And he's like, I think I know the tape you're talking about. And we went in his basement. And he's like, is this it? And he had just leftover siding, leftover tape laying around in the unfinished part of the basement. He shows me the tape. And I'm like, yeah, that's the correct tape. They had the right stuff here. I'm like, but if you flip that box over, see those instructions? And the instructions are on the box. So I'm showing him how the box tells you to do it, and then telling him and showing him photos that your house is not this way. And he was like, oh, they had the information right in front of them and they didn't utilize it. They didn't. And then I'm trying to kind of explain to him, well, for the worker's sake, I'm going to tell you right now, especially in the world of installing vinyl siding, there's a precedent of how long it should take. When you get crews that are they're getting paid per square, the faster they do it, the more money they make. When you get crews that someone's running it and they're documenting this time so tightly that the boss, if you stop to read instructions, you might You'd at best get yelled at worst lose your job for not working hard enough, fast enough, getting through it, but you could actually deliver a better job if you read the instructions. And so not taking the time to read the instructions is a precedent of how you work and how you get through things and how much time you have to do it. And I can tell you, years ago, I had some siding done on a house that we were working on, and for manpower concerns, we brought in someone that I knew that was a siding installer. We brought in a trade partner company to do the siding part to be able to get through this project. And while we did the project, we had to keep kind of stopping them and saying, wait, this needs to be this way. That needs to be flashed this way. There was a couple times they had to take some siding back off to do the flashing tape the way that we wanted them to do it, to get it right. And so that caused them to take too many hours to perform the work. So everybody that I was with all spoke and talked about after the job, like, those siding guys were really quick and they really got through that project fast. And they were really amazed at how they were able to do that. But that's all they do. And then I said, well, here, you want to hear something really weird from the other end of that, because I'm like, one of my really good friends works on that crew and know and understand that they got in trouble from the boss for taking too many hours to do the job. So what you thought was fast, they thought was slow. And it was because we were stopping them to make sure they were getting it right. They could have done it on time and made the budget that the boss wanted, but it wouldn't have been done the best way possible in the way that we want it done here at Mosby Building Arts. So that's just, it's something to be concerned about and to consider and have a lot of conversations about. And it's not bad for you as the consumer to learn how things should be done, the best way to do things, and try and just reassure yourself that they're either doing it that way, or kind of keep your eye on them, make sure they're doing it that way, or ask questions up front to find out if they know how to do it that way. Find out if they know everything that you've just learned, because I've spoken to people that have literally told me right out front, water doesn't get behind vinyl siding. It's fine. It all channels here. The J channel takes it there. And I'm just like, oh gosh, no, that is not how it is at all. And there's a better way to do things. So coming from a different platform and figuring things out and trying to be better and trying to learn and getting educated, now all that's changed for me over the past 23 years at being here at Mosby Building Arts. The things that I've been trained on and learned and went to classes on and got educated on, if you would have told me 23 years ago that, well, you know what, later on, 10, 15 years from now, you're going to be helping your clients get the best thing possible with a computer and an iPad, not a hammer, I would have said, nope, that's probably not going to be me. I don't know what you're talking about. If someone would have said, you know, 23 years from now, you're going to be talking for 2 hours about these sort of situations with houses and everything on the radio, I would have said, now you really don't know what you're talking about, because that's definitely not happening. But how we learn, how we change, and the things we come about trying to do the best things possible is pretty remarkable, and it gets us to do things that we never thought we really would. Once we know what we're doing and we're confident about it and we know how helpful it is and how much better it really can be, then you can be excited about it and you can really go, I will talk about that, and I can talk about that because I do want to help people get the best things possible. So, hey, we're going to take our final break for this last hour here. We'll have time. If you've got a question, if you've got a concern, we'll have time for you in our final segment here. 314-436-7900. Don't go nowhere. We'll figure something out. We'll have something good to mention in the last segment for sure. I'll talk to you then.
Now, back to the Home Improvement Show, presented by Mosby Building Arts on KMOX. Once again, here's Rich Orris.
All right, guys, we are back. We've got Rosemary on the line looking for some help here. So let's get straight to Rosemary and see what's going on.
Hi, how are you?
I am doing great. How are you?
Good. Love the snow.
Yeah, thank you for calling. You love the snow, yeah.
Okay, I was listening and you were talking about siding, and I have an issue where some ground cover grew up under my siding, and it's almost it grew up under the siding, and is going around my window, and it faces my neighbor's yard, so I didn't see it. And it was also going up my side of my chimney. They actually pulled it off the chimney, but it's still under my siding and around this window. And it's probably about two inches in diameter. And I don't know kind of what to do. It's stuck in there. It's like growing in my house. So, yeah, not good.
Yeah, and definitely kind of what we were just going over with water that can get rainwater that can get behind vinyl siding, it would be a really good idea to get that ground cover ivy pulled out of there from behind the siding, because what can happen is where that's finding cracks and crevices and growing into the wall, in between the wall and the window, wherever it's going, if water gets there, the water will then follow that vine.
Actually, they cut it.
Uh-huh.
It's dead. It's dead at this point.
Yep.
And I was thinking of trying to put gravel or something along the edge of my foundation, and I don't know if that's a good idea. To keep that ground cover over there from growing up, because it faces their yard, and I have to go around into their yard to see the other side of my house. It's the way these houses were made.
Oh, so, I see. Yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't know it was there, but they had cut it for me. Evidently, they saw it, and it's evidently been something that. Was, you know, it's been there for quite some time, maybe a year or longer. So it's, but if you touch, it's dead. It's just it just grew into the wall. And so does that all have to be torn out? And if you tear it out, I mean, is the wall coming with it? And I mean, under the siding, and just, it's kind of scary.
Yeah. So
in the window.
Yeah. So I would definitely recommend taking the siding off the house and tearing out all of that, even though it's been cut and it's dead. It's going to continue to kind of die and deteriorate, which may give even more opportunity for water to follow that inside your wall system. So, and I think it's been there for at least 2 or 3 years. Being 2 inches in diameter, it's been there for a while, and that's okay. But I would take that siding off. I would get rid of, cut out, pull off, get rid of all of that ivy that you can off of that wall, and then I would go back and do what I was talking about with Bruce about. Then you put house wrap on that wall, you flash tape around the window, You get that wall buttoned up, and then you can put, if that siding's in good condition, you can put it right back on the wall.
Okay.
You can reinstall it. It takes a little more labor, but then you're not buying the material. So sometimes, depending on the size of the wall, It kind of is the same amount of money, new material or extra labor to reuse. Because if you think about it like a puzzle, you got to kind of take it apart, label the pieces, know where they were. You kind of number them like per row, and then you can go backwards as you put it back to put it back on. And then your wall's protected. And then, yes, you stopping ivy, even with gravel, might be a little bit hard because, boy, ivy is sturdy and it'll grow through gravel. So it wouldn't be a bad idea to try and dig that out, put like a metal edge and put an 18-inch or something row of gravel up against that foundation. But I'd still keep your eye on it because that ivy can grow right through that gravel and get down to the ground. It's sturdy. The way it took up onto your wall and everything.
Oh, my gosh. It was like, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
And I never walk around that side of my house because the way our houses are made is one side of our house is in our neighbor's yard and their house is in their neighbor's yard. So it's just weird how these houses were made. So I always forget about that side of the house. It's like I went over there and I went, oh, my gosh. I feel like if I pulled it off, it's just going to pull my wall.
Your wall's safe. We're just about out of time, but your wall's going to be okay. Don't be that worried about your wall. It'll get buttoned up. The wall will be okay. So, but keep your eye on that ivy from here on out. We're completely out of time, but hey, thanks for the question, Rosemary. Thanks for all of the calls, the concerns, the questions. Had a great time today after Thanksgiving, and be good to your homes. I'll talk to everybody next week.